Yoshua Parakei. Vayikishmoa kol malchi amoreisha be'ever yardin yama v'chol malchi akenani yisrael yama v'yaseh shahovish yisrael mizmeh yardin b'nei b'nei yisrael ad avarnu rabbi yimasel v'abam v'lo yabam od ruach mitnei b'nei yisrael. There we go. It was when all the kings of the Amori who were on the west side of the Jordan River and all the kings of the Canaanite that were on the right by the sea, by the coast of the sea, they heard that Hashem had dried up the Jordan River. Now, we talked about the Jordan River being dried up last time, what happened, how it just stood up in the air. But even the people on the west side of Eretz Canaan, meaning all the way by the sea itself, by the Yamsuf, even they heard about this. They saw it, according to the Medrash. They, immediately their hearts melted. They no longer had spirit to stand in front of Bnei Yisrael. They were just scared out of their minds.
Not Mediterranean, but...
The Mediterranean. Yama, the Yamsuf. Oh, well, I said Yamsuf, right? No, I meant Yama Gadol, by the Mediterranean Sea. But Isi Yamar Hashem is Yoshua, El Yoshua. At that time, Hashem said to Yoshua, Selecha Charvo Surim, make for yourselves knives made of rock, sharpened rocks. Vishuv Mol's Bnei Yisrael Shenis, and I would like you to give the Bnei Yisrael a second bris mila. Yasel Yoshua Charvo Surim, by Yamos Bnei Yisrael, El Givas Aralos. And Yoshua did this, right? And he gave Bnei Yisrael bris milas by Givas Aralos. Now, this is interesting. It's the 11th of Nisan, the day after they had crossed over the Jordan River, and Yoshua gives a bris mila to all of the people. I don't know if he was the only mohel, that doesn't mean, but he made sure that everybody went ahead and got a bris mila itself. Now,
so this is the next round leaving.
After leaving Mitzrayim. So the question is, why did they not have bris mila up until this point? What was the point? So the first answer is easy, because number one, they were afraid. I'm sorry? The Ruach Sophonis. We'll get to that. But the first answer is that it's dangerous to travel for the first 3 days after being circumcised. The flesh is not yet healed completely. So that was a real problem. For them to go through, that's going to be the first problem. The first problem is that it was too dangerous, so there was nothing they could do up until that point. Welcome, Dave. So too, the second answer over here is that since it was possible they were, well, part of the first answer, since it was always possible they're going to be traveling the very next day, they never thought it was safe, so they said, all right, forget it. We're not going to do the Bris Mila because we don't want to put our kids in danger. The second is during the 40 years, the northern wind, that's what you just said, the northern wind did not blow for them. The northern wind always heals flesh really quickly, right? That north wind is special property that allows it to be, but it also scatters clouds. Since they were in the Anani HaKavod up until this point, they couldn't have the north wind. And if they couldn't have the north wind, then it was dangerous to give a bris mila to their babies. Shevet Levi did it anyway. They were willing to go ahead and give bris mila, even though they knew that it was dangerous, they refused to give it up completely. Now, however, they had crossed over the Jordan River. The Anani HaKavod were gone, and they were ready to get the bris mila right then. Now, the reason why they were supposed to go right then, and they were supposed to get it right at that point, is interesting. They were no longer afraid of being attacked by the Canaan. Everybody was scared out of their minds to go anywhere near Bnei Yisrael because of what just happened with the Jordan River. There is no better time to go ahead and do a bris mila. Welcome, Jordy. Just take any of these over here. This is like the best time to be able to go ahead and do it because no one's going to fight them. It was scary to be able to fight them. So if you have to worry about the bris mila that all Bnei Yisrael is going to be incapacitated for the next couple days, this is the time to give the bris mila. Second is because since they were about to start their destruction or of all the people of Eretz Canaan, and that was in the schus of Avram Avinu, who came in the land, what better way to start that than to take the schus of Avram Avinu of the bris mila, and to take that on for yourself and to do it right over there. Number three is to unite Bnei Yisrael, to put them all together, to put them into one category. They were all willing to be able to do it together. Up until this point, they were one people because they were sitting underneath the clouds and doing everything together. So it made sense that, you know, you didn't need the bris mila to unite them. Now they needed the bris mila to unite them in order to make sure they wouldn't divide into factions when they were around. That's that. Number four, they were about to eat the Korban Pesach. In order to eat the Korban Pesach, you need to have a bris mila. They had not brought a Korban Pesach since the second year in the Midbar when they all had bris milas. Now, however, they're going to bring it again. They needed a bris mila in order to go through. So those were those right over there.
But
now,
in the third year, everybody would have had a bris mila anyway.
I'm sorry?
Most people
are not. You're right. But since the Korban Pesach had not been brought for the next 38 years in the Midbar, and now all of a sudden they're going to bring the Korban Pesach, they needed to give bris mila again before they brought it in. We're asking why they had to do bris mila right then when they walked inside, right there itself. Now, it is interesting over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded them to use stone knives. Now, why stone knives and not metal knives over here? So it seems like this, that number one, it had to be it's got to be for yourself. In other words, we've got to have qualified people who are able to do it. Also, it seems weird that it says a second time over here. It's as if this is a second time. What do you mean a second time? This is the first time anybody has ever gotten a bris mila before. The answer is that Yoshua was the one who had given the bris mila to the people when they left Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu did not do it. It was Yoshua who had done it. And since Yoshua had done it earlier, this is the second time that Yoshua is going to give bris mila to Bnei Yisrael. Obviously, this is hard. What?
Why is that important?
I don't think it's important as much as it is finish the job that you started before. You understand what I'm saying? Like, if you started this mitzvah bris milah, then finished off, you're still around, you're still there. But that's the idea behind it. And therefore, it's considered as if it was something there. Since Yeshua had to give a bris milah to everybody there, it's all pasuk aleph, parakei pasuk aleph. Since he had to do it, it had to be well organized. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to get a very sharp stone so that if it got damaged, they could redo it again and again and again. It makes sense that there would be more than just one over here. It does make sense that back in the day they would use stone instead of metal. There are so many impurities and so many different types of metals, and I don't know if they had the healing, the way to heal that back then, that stone knives were probably easier to use than metal knives. It probably didn't hurt as much. I'm sorry?
More porous.
It depends on what kind of stone. So it depends on what kind of stone they had. If they had good stone, like something that would be like almost like onyx, which they definitely had since they were using it for the Mishkan itself, it's possible that would be easier for them. I'm not saying it's for sure. I would think so. Yeah, anything could be used for shechita. Even glass could be used for shechita. So that would be there, right? It could be that it's going to be like that. It also could be that since circumcision is like entering inside the Jewish people, maybe back then they held you couldn't use metal, which shortens people's lives. So you couldn't use that. Yes, stone was used by Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Yeah.
Somewhere that says why you could use metal for a bris?
It's not a Gemara. There's a Prima Gadim that quotes a Medrash that when it happened by David HaMelech, David HaMelech made, there's a whole thing that he made a deal with the metal on Goliath's head to allow, and the Prima Gadim brings it down as to why we use metal knives for bris milah, and he says because of that, that the metal opened up for the rocks to go through and hit Goliath, I'm sorry, so therefore it switched it over. The Prima Gadim brings it down as the reason why we use metal knives. So it's a halachic safer, which is really strange. But yeah, that's the medrash that they bring down. And everybody brings it down. It's like the strangest thing. Because the metal opened up for the stones to hit Goliath and kill him. It's like...
What's the connection between that and...
You know, when we get there, maybe we'll try to figure out that medrash. But that's the medrash that's brought down as to why we switched to metal.
If there is actual gzeres hakazav, why you should use stone...
No gzeres hakazav, just Yeshua. It was only the Yeshua. Now the truth is, by Moshe Rabbeinu it also said, by Moshe Rabbeinu it also said stone. Right, batikach tziporat sword.
Right, because maybe, like you said earlier, it was easier.
Right,
but there was no like actual halacha that
no,
you have to use.
That's correct. That would be okay. There is a second answer. The second answer is shenis means there's a second part to the bris milah that was added on right now. Up until now, they had all gotten bris milahs, but the bris milahs were not with priya. Priya is a little bit different. Priya is something that's a little bit added on in which you have to push back the membrane, right, while you're doing the bris milah itself. That did not need to be done by the times of Avraham Avinu. It was added by Yoshua right now as a gzer, I don't want to say gzer, it's a custom,
it's
almost, like, almost like a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, but yeah.
It's a derabanan. It can't be derived if it's not Moshe.
I don't remember the exact halacha. I believe we hold that it's a deal raisa and that Yoshua got it in such a case where it's considered a deal raisa. I don't know.
By definition, that's not a deal raisa.
That's a good call, because ein rishai, ein navi rishai l'chad. So I don't know. I don't remember why, but Priya was added on at this point, right? And he was able to do it. And it could be that there were some people that did get bris milahs, and even they needed a second bris milah because they never got Priya. They needed that as well. Perhaps that's the reason why, and it came through.
Is, basically, whatever he had interpreted.
Oh, very good. Hold on. It says right over here. It was already given to Moshe Rabbeinu. He taught it to the children of, you know, Bnei Yisrael in the desert, but it had never been performed up until this time. Yeah, because
they didn't do
bris milah. Very good. It was right over here. I just didn't notice it over here. And there we go. There's a whole story with Unkelus over here, but it's a long one, and we're not going to go all the way through it. And that's that. Now, here we go. Zadavar Shamal Yoshua Kalam. This is in Pasuk Dalet. This is what happened when Yoshua mauled the entire people. Yosef Mitzrayim, Zacharim, all the males, Kwanshe, Mokama, all the people of the war, Mesu, Bamibur, they had died in the desert by Darab Yisrael Mitzrayim on the way out of Mitzrayim. Those people that left Mitzrayim got a bris milah from Yoshua, but they died while they were in the desert. It says, "Kimulim how you call it amiyotzim." Everybody who left got bris milahs. But they did not get a bris milah when they left Mitzrayim. Because though in the 40 years that they walked through the desert, all the people that were the men of war that left Mitzrayim, since they didn't listen to the word of Hashem who swore that he would give them the land, right, or who swore that he wouldn't give them the land that he had sworn to their fathers to give to them, they all died throughout the Midrash. Their children went instead of them. Osamal Yoshua. Those were mauled by Yoshua. Ki areilim hayu. There were arulz ki lo malos on baderach. They did not do so on the road. As we said before, that was one of the four reasons why they didn't do the bris milah on the road, because they didn't know when they were going to stop. That's the idea behind it. Now,
they're going to stop what?
I'm sorry. They didn't know when they were going to stop traveling, and because they didn't know. Yeah, because that was dangerous for somebody to get a bris mila and then travel afterward. They said, okay, we're not going to do bris milas. That was one of the ideas behind it right over there. Now, there was, everybody in the nation was circumcised on this day. They made a hill called Givas Arelos, an actual hill of the Orlas. I mean, you think about it, 600,000 men with all their Orlas put together. It might not have been a huge hill, but it was a hill. They called the Givat Arelos, and they put it through there. Bilam, when he tried to curse the Jews, saw this in a vision, that after they came into Eretz Yisrael, when they knew there were enemies trying to fight them and destroy them, and they went ahead and did Bris Mila, it was like, how in the world did this nation do that? Why would they do that? It's such a dangerous thing. It was like almost a remembrance of this act, and it seemed to be absolutely unbelievable. Okay, there was a lot about Eliyahu of you over here, and that's that. It says, after everybody had finished getting the bris mila, they waited in that camp until they had recovered. It takes a few days, obviously, and that's that. I have removed the cherpa of Mitzrayim, the degradation of Mitzrayim from upon you. Everything that reminded you of what happened in Mitzrayim, that they weren't giving bris milas at that time, it's all gone. Hold on a second, and I called that place Gilgal Ad Yom Hazeh. Gilgal says it's rolled off you. Galosius Herpas Mitzrayim. It was called Gilgal for that day. What do you say, Jordan?
It was all done the same day,
seemingly. And I guess if Yeshua needed help, there were other people to help him, right? But yes.
It wasn't just Yeshua.
It would be very difficult to understand that Yeshua did it all by himself. There is another line, right? What's the disgrace? So some people said, look, these people aren't circumcised just like us. They're no different from us. So why did they consider themselves different? And that was the disgrace. However, there is quite another answer over here. Some say it's referring to the promiscuity of Mitzrayim, that the Egyptians were so into lewdness and promiscuity and taking away the Orla took away that extra bit of Erva. You no longer have that Cherpas Mitzrayim, in other words, that idea over there. But there's a third one. And if anybody remembers that the star that Paro saw when they were leaving Mitzrayim, he saw that they were leaving in the mazel of Ra. And I gave a shiur on it not too long ago about the mazel, about the gods of Egypt, in which I said that Ra refers to their god named Horus. And I think we're mispronouncing it, so it's okay to say it.
God named Ra, R-A.
Yeah, that's not referring to this. The Ra was the god of the sun. However, at one point, Horus, who is the god of Mars, was connected with Amon-Ra, and they were all put together as one. You know when that happened? 3,500 years ago, in the times of Ramses II. So at that time, when Amon-Ra was put together with Horus, they put them all together. So he became the god of the stars in the sky. So it could be that they're all connected. Yeah, it could be that they're all connected together. So that was the Ra that they saw. Who knows? We don't know exactly, but that's the pshat that they saw. Now the Cherpas Mitzrayim is gone because they saw that there was going to be bloodshed when you went into the Midbar. This was the revelation of the bloodshed. The bloodshed was their bris milas that they got when they left, when they were finally going into Eretz Yisrael. That was the bloodshed. They didn't die, rather they got that bloodshed instead. Okay, says in Pasuk Yud. They were in Eretz Yisrael. They were on the west side of the Jordan River at this point. They're by Gilgal. Vayakon ben Yisrael by Gilgal, they camped in Gilgal, Vayasu was a Pesach, Baros, Yom, Lechodesh, Ba'erab, Ba'arvos, Yerichon. Remember, they came out on the 11th. They brought the Korban Pesach on the 14th. In the evening, right? By that evening, by the other side of the Jordan River, right outside, right across from Yericho. They ate from the ground of the land. In other words, all the food of the land. You know, they had fields out there and everything. They ate from that the day after Pesach. Because up until that point, it was considered chadash. New grain is not allowed to be eaten until the 16th of Nisan. That's a law in the Torah itself. So they started eating from the new grain the day after Pesach. Matzos v'koloi v'etzam yom hazeh. They ate matzos and they ate koloi, these types of whatever it is, roasted kernels. Yeah, kernels. They ate that right over there. Up until this point, there was man. The man stayed with them, even though Moshe Rabbeinu had died. It stayed with them until they didn't need it anymore. And they didn't need it anymore when they were able to eat from the ground. And that happened on the 16th of Nisan. The 16th of Nisan is when they were able to do it.
They haven't fought any battles yet. Where are they finding enough food to...
In the fields all around Yericho. Because Yericho was closed in and they weren't coming out. So all around that area.
A city where it has enough fields to feed so many people.
I'm not so sure. I mean, they might have had trade. You know, if you have fields, you have fields. I don't think that's, to me, I don't think that's so bad.
No, but I'm saying
so they would have found stuff.
I mean, that would be like, I mean, you have a massive nation. The city of Yericho couldn't be that big.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Maybe there were still cities around. All you needed is a lot of fields. And there could have been many fields around the Jordan River, which would have been more, it would have been more water, you know, there would have been water everywhere. So it would make sense that there were a lot of stuff. There is a medrash that says that they planted as soon as, they weren't there. They came over on the 10th of Nisan, but they planted on the 11th, and miraculously it grew by the 15th and whatever it was. You know, but that's a hard thing to understand. In 4 days, everything grew, right? But it seems clear that they just had a lot of fields there. It made sense. It was very fertile ground. It was right around there. It could be they still had mun. That's still possible. They still had mun at one point or whatever it is. It could also be that they bought grain from the people around them, or if there were people around them over there. Either way, regardless, they definitely were harvesting the crop as soon as they were able to do it, right? And that's that. But yeah, it says that the miracle here that they planted right there, in 6 days it was able to grow, and there was tremendous miracles, etc. And there was stuff like that. Fine. There was a bunch of stuff about how long they ate the mun for and if this counted or not. Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayishpos Haman Mimachoros Ba'achla Mi'avor Ha'aretz. The mun stopped. It no longer was there. It all melted down and was gone when they started eating from the ground of the land. In other words, they had the mun available until they were able to eat from the ground. Once they did that, loya od libnei saw mun. No longer do they have a yochel mitvuas eretz kanan b'shanahi. That year, they had to eat all the tvua of the ground itself. That's when they had to start eating regular fields. Okay, stop. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Now we have the famous pasuk, which is so strange. Vayibi yos Yeshua b'richo, and Yeshua was in Yericho v'yisa ena v'yar. He lifted up his eyes and he saw. What did he see? V'nei ish omed l'negdo. There was a man, seemingly, standing opposite. Charbo shufa v'yado. His sword was unsheathed in his hand. Vayelch Yeshua. I love Yeshua. Went to him. V'yomelo halanu atayim l'tzareinu. Yeshua recognized it as a malach. Although it appeared to him as a man, he recognized it as being a malach, and he said, are you with us, or are you with our enemies? Which one are you with? V'yomer lo. He said, no. Now that doesn't make any sense. Are you with us, or are you with our enemies? He said, no. Okay, and he starts v'Hashem. I am an angel of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Atabasi. I come right now, he says. Vayipol Yeshua as Panavarza. Yeshua fell to his face at the ground. Vayishtachavu. He bowed down. Vayom Lamaduni Medabra Lavdo. What does my master say to what is the command, his servant himself? What am I supposed to know over here? Clearly, something is interesting over here. The Pashup Shot is that night, an angel was sent to Yeshua to strengthen him, to say, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Yeshua wasn't sure if this was a malach or a shade trying to destroy him, and therefore he asked him, Halanu Ata Litzarein. Are you trying to help us? Are you against us? I can't tell. You have your sword unsheathed. Is the sword unsheathed against Klal Yisrael? Is the sword unsheathed against Yericho? What are you trying to do over here? He wasn't positive. He also knew, Yeshua, that he had done two things wrong that day, and he wasn't sure which one this malach was here for. Number one, they had not brought the Korban Tamid. Now, why didn't they bring the Korban Tamid? Because they were preparing themselves for war against Yericho. They assumed that they had to do it naturally, and because they were going to have to do it naturally, they weren't able to get in time the Korban Tamid and do everything they needed to do. It took time to get everything together. But he knew that that was something that he had done wrong. And number two, they stopped studying Torah because they were going through all the plans that they needed to be able to defeat Yericho. Now, again, in a natural fashion, that's what anybody would need to do. And Yeshua was blamed for that because on his level, his, not ours, but his level, he should realize you didn't need to prepare a Kadosh Baruch Hu had everything set for them. They wouldn't have to do anything. It was going to be miraculous when they fought Yericho. Therefore, you should have devoted himself to studying Torah itself. And that's what he means. Halanu, are you here because of what we did, the Torah that we did not study properly? Or Litzarenu, Korbanos, are there to knock down the enemies, that are there. That's what it means. Halanu atol im Litzarenu. Are you here against our enemies to be able to knock down those people over there? So which one is it? And he said, Atabasi, I come for what's happening right now. Right now, is that... Could you mute it? Do you mind muting that? We're just hearing a lot of noise from the background. Okay, but either way, it says, the angel said, now I come over here. I'm coming now, and you know why I'm coming right now? I didn't come in the afternoon because that would have been for the Korban Tamid. I came for right now because you're not learning Torah. It's the idea of, if you're up anyway, you don't need to prepare for this war, just learn. And that's the problem over here. That's what happened over here. That's what the Malach was coming for, and now he was really worried. The first thing that Yeshua had been told in Parak Aleph, not yet. No, not if you don't learn. If you don't learn, we're not going to be with you. I'm with, and that's why he said no. No. What's the answer of no? It's that I'm here for you if you learn. But right now, I'm not here for anything. I'm not here for you. I'm not here against you. I'm here waiting for you guys to start learning, and that's that. And he realized the first thing that Yeshua had been told in Perek Aleph, V'algisa bo yomam v'layla. You have to keep learning day and night, and you can't stop. Nobody else was told this. Yeshua was told this. And he realized that was a problem on him, and he davened at that moment for Yeshua for it to be forgiven right over there. There was a bit of a kash over here as well. Why not bring the korbanos? He assumed that they had to maintain their battle positions against Yericho. He assumed that they couldn't bring the aron back, so the aron was in front. If the aron was out of place, he figured that the korban tamid could not be brought, but he was wrong. The korban tamid, the aron kodesh had to be brought back. The korban tamid should have been brought in front of it, and it was all a mistake of Yeshua. That was the problem. Not only that, but also the people are not allowed to have pur revu. They're not allowed to be together with their wives if the aron kodesh is not in its proper place. Therefore, it not only stopped the korban tumah from being brought. It also stopped people from being together with their wives. Both of those were the problems over here.
When the pasuk says ki amakam asher atah umeid alav.
Oh, I'm not there yet. Hold on. Right there.
When it says madrin yimedaber al.
Yeah. What do you say?
That's Yoshua, right?
Yoshua is saying to him.
So
yeah.
According to that pshat, though, you said the malach is saying, "No, I'm here now for the Torah."
And then he said, so what other commands do you have for me? What other commands aside from that? Is there anything else you need to tell me? And that's exactly what the Malach said in Pasuk Tesvav. And we'll get there in a second. There is another command over here. There were three signs that he saw that this is a Malach and not a human being. Number one, the other people with him didn't see anyone there. He turned to everybody else. Everybody was like, we don't see anybody. So that's how he knew. Number two, there was an awesome appearance. It made him look like a little bit different. Number three, he appeared all at once in front of him as if he had just been appeared in front of him. And he realized when the Malach said Hashem's name, right, then he knew it wasn't a shade. He knew it wasn't a demon itself, and that's why he was willing to bow down to it, knowing that it represented a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Chas V'Shalom to bow down to a Malach normally. But as we talked about in a shir not too long ago, Ki Shmi B'Kirbo, there are certain Malachim that have Hashem's name within them that are considered the representative of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can bow down to Hashem, even though it's a Malach in front of you. You're not bowing down to the angel, referring to something else as well. That's the idea behind it. Now, what was this angel? Which angel was this? It's Machlokas Rishonin, whether it was Michal or Gavriel. Either it was Michal or Gavriel. Those that say it's Michal, it's because there was a Malach that was promised to Klal Yisrael in last week's Parsha, as well as in Parsha Kisisa, and Moshe Ben rejected it and said, I don't want the Malach with me. And if you don't come with me, I'll tell Lenin, he said, don't bring us out of here until you promise that you're going to come with us, he said to our Kadosh Baruch Hu. So when Moshe Ben dies, that Malach comes in. How do we know what that Malach is? Well, at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh, there's a siman for all the psukim in the Parsha. There's 101 psukim in Parshas Tetzaveh. Parshas Tetzaveh is the only Parsha in the Torah from Shmos and on where Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. Vaschanan Ekev Re'eh do not, because it's Moshe Rabbeinu talking the whole time. Vaschanan Ekev Re'eh. So those don't have Moshe Rabbeinu's name, but it's all Moshe all the way through from Shmos and on, except for Parshas Tetzaveh where Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned and he's not speaking. It's Hashem speaking to him, and it just says, but Tetzaveh a love. It's almost like to him. Didn't say Moshe Rabbeinu's name. The reason why is because Parsha Tetzaveh was the Kohen Gadol's Parsha that was supposed to be Moshe Rabbeinu's. He didn't get it because he complained too much and it went to Aaron. So there Moshe Rabbeinu was not there. Therefore, the siman in the Parsha, the amount of pesukim in the Parsha is 101. 101 is the gematria of Michael, and that's the Malach that comes in when Moshe Rabbeinu is gone. If Moshe is not there, Michael's in. Here, when Moshe is gone, the Malach that comes to Yeshua is Michael. He's the Malach that comes inside.
Hidden letters of Moshe's name.
Not very good. The Nalam is exactly that. If you do Moshe, it's Mem, so that's a Mem. Shin, Yud, Nun is the missing letters. And He is He Aleph. So if you take the Mem, Nun, Yud, Aleph, is a gematria of 101 gematria of Michael. That's exactly it. Right? And that's the idea behind it, that he's the missing part of Moshe Rabbeinu. There is another opinion that says Matat. I think it's a mistake. Metad is the Malach that's mentioned in Parsha Mishpatim, not over here, but regardless, it's fine. But Yom Tzartzva Yoshua, Hashem Yoshua, Pasuk Tzvav, the Tzartzva Hashem said to Yoshua, Shal Na'alcha Me'al Reglecha, take your shoes off your foot. Literally, it's take your shoe off your foot. Ki Amakom Asher, the only way to love Kodeshu, because the land that you're standing on is very holy. Vayas Yoshua Ken, Yoshua did exactly that. Here he's trying to tell you, you're standing in right outside. This area over here is considered holy because you're here. The Shekhinah that stood here in this place, it's not that this place has intrinsic holiness. There is no absolute holiness outside Yericho. There's nothing there. But there's an holiness because you're here and you're Kadosh. And therefore, you have to take off your shoes to be able to make it there. And Yoshua. Because Yoshua was just that great. And for that reason, it says Na'alcha, not Na'alecha. By Moshe Rabbeinu, it said Shal Na'alecha Me'al Reglecha, take off your shoes when he came to Har Sinai. Because both of the shoes, he's supposed to take off both. This is a very holy place. This is only a holy place, not the holiest place. There's another answer that's given. Moshe Rabbeinu had to remove all vestiges of physicality to become the Moshe Rabbeinu that we know of. Yoshua remained physical even afterward. And one of the rayas is Yoshua only got married after all of this happened. He's not married yet. I mean, at least we don't see that he's married yet. But we know he gets married later on to Rachav Azona, which means he took on physicality after he became this awesome Navi, which is definitely interesting. Shal Na'alcha is take away one shoe, but leave on one shoe. In other words, keep your physicality in some way.
So did he just stop wearing shoes from then on?
No, not literally. Why, it did not literally mean.
He was holy.
I think you're right. I think you're right with that. It's a combination of that the Malach was able to meet him at that time. That made the holiness there, and that he was willing to take on the tzivu of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but not at all times.
He had the Shem Hashem.
Yeah. So maybe right at that moment. he was able to do that. I don't know. All right, Park Vav, now we have something interesting. So here's where we are, guys. If you look right over here, here's the Dead Sea, here's the Jordan River, the plains of Moab. They crossed over the Jordan River right around that area. Gilgal is right there, Jericho is right there. It is where it is today. It's almost very close to where it's going to be. And we'll go into it right now. It says, Jericho Silgaris Musugaris, closed up and totally closed up. Nobody allowed anybody out. In other words, there were seven walls there altogether, seven walls all around. Each one was as thick as it was high. Right, so there was a very thick, high wall. The gates were made of absolute iron. They were bolted on the inside and outside with bolts made of iron and brass. The gates on the different walls were not aligned with each other. That meant even if you got in through one door, you had to go all the way over here to get in through the other door, which is very smart, right, to be able to get in. Right, that's that. They were also protected by magic spells, where you couldn't get in without permission from those people who knew the magic inside it. And if all else failed, they also had demons that were able to protect them. These people of Jericho were extremely closed off in every which way. Every morning, the problem was, every single morning, whenever they tried to lock them, right? Whenever they tried to lock the gates of Jericho, they found them open, as if to welcome in the Jews. So every morning they had to close them again. That's why Sogaris and Misugaris. They kept closing them again and again and again, right? And that's what happened over there.
Which of the seven walls did Rachav live in?
So we're going to see. There might have been parts where it was very close to one another and those walls were so thick, right, that was all considered like one big wall. So that makes a little bit of sense. I'm not sure exactly when it came down over here. But in this case, Jericho, nobody was allowed to leave. So even though the walls were open, the gates may have been open, nobody's allowed to leave Jericho itself. Hashem said to Yeshua, I have put in your hands Jericho and its king, all the strong men, it's all going to be delivered to you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying like this, I'm delivering the Malach of Jericho to you. You're not going to have to do anything. Just follow my instructions. Really, you're not going to have to do anything. Everything's going to happen for you. Don't worry about anything. Yeshua, as we'll see, he's going to put his foot down on top of the neck of the angel of Jericho in order to show that he had conquered him already and they didn't have to do anything. I want you to surround the city, all the people of war. I want you to surround the city and go around the city once. Do that 6 days. Go around once. One for 6 days. Shiva Kwanim Yisu Shiva Shofros Yovlim Lifnei Aron. Seven Kwanim are going to carry seven shofars, yovels. These are ram shofars in front of the Aron Kodesh. But Yom Shvi, seventh day, which is going to be Shabbos. Tosobos Yir Sheva Pami. You're going to surround the city seven times. Akwanim Yisku Shofros while the Kwanim below the shofars. Vayivin Shol Bekarin Yovel B'Shem Hachem is Kol Shofar. When the yovel goes off, when you hear the Kol Shofar, Yariyu Kol Amtrua Gedola. At that moment on the seventh day, everybody's going to scream out loud. V'Nafla Chomos Yir Tachtel. All the wall is going to fall beneath itself, and each person is just going to come in. It's not going to fall down this way. It's going to fall down this way. It's going to come straight down.
The height and the depth were the same.
It couldn't fall that way, right? It had to just go down straight inside over there, which is really interesting. There were groups. The first people to travel was Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Sheva Menashe. They had to fulfill their promise in the first war that they were going to have. Number two, then they went the seven Kohanim with the seven ram's horns. And number three, there's going to be the Kohanim carrying the Aron Kodesh. And behind all of them was going to be the rest of the people. Shevet Dun was going to be the final one. That was going to be the order over here. It was Sunday when HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded this to Yeshua. Shabbos was going to be the seventh day over here. Now, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want it to happen this way? This is a little crazy. The answer is Kadosh Baruch wanted to show that everything is his and that he's all powerful. The same way he did in Mitzrayim with all the Makos and then Kriyas Yamsa to show everybody how great he was, the same thing over here as well. He also wanted to show he's the creator of the world. I can do everything. And therefore, the 7 days of creation, so to speak, they're going around in all 7 days to show that it's Bidafka on seven itself. Right? That's that. We do this. I'm sorry, Docha Shabbos. You can fight a war on Shabbos, and this was because it was a command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically to fight on Shabbos itself. You should know that this is why we do Hoshana Rabbah as well as all those, the Hakafos that we do with the Lulav going around the Bima. You know, no, we don't do it on Shabbos, we stay in place. But that's why we do all that. And Hoshana Rabbah itself, we go around seven times. It's on Sukkot we do it because there are 70 nations of the world, and we're trying to show our mastery through Remez over the 70 nations of the world. That going around seven times is going to be like that. We say Hoshana. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save us. Each time you receive a salvation from the 10 nations of the 70 nations altogether, you're protected from all the seven forces of impurity and everything like that, and it drives evil from them. If you do it correctly, that's what it's supposed to be. It's also the reason why a chassan and kala, we all know the chassan and kala, the kala goes around the chassan seven times. Same reason to be able to make that type of whatever it is. There are other people that say this refers to the 70 years of a person. Some say it refers to the cycles of the world itself. It's symbolic of the seven stages of a person's life he goes into. At the first, you're a king because you're a little child. child, then you're a pig. That happens when you're like 2 or 3 years old. You sit in your own stew, in your own poo, right? Then you're a goat. Then you're a horse. Then you're a donkey going to work. Then you're a dog when you're around 56 years old, just taking care of everybody else. And then finally, you're a monkey at the end where you can't do much else and you lose almost your humanity toward the end of your life. It's pretty crazy, right? But it goes 7 altogether. It's also supposed to be you have mastery over the 7 nations that are Eretz Canaan. You have mastery over the 7 Kochvei Leches, the 5 planets and the sun and the moon that they were able to see with their own eyes and the sky itself as if they were in charge of their own mazel, and all that was supposed to be there. There's no question, however, that the 7 times that they went around was absolutely a miracle. Wait a second, even if Yericho was a small city, let's say it was a small city, having a bunch of warriors go around a city once in one day, I can understand. 7 times in one day? I honestly, let's say it was a really small city. 7 times in one day, your entire army going around. I don't even know how it's possible.
Why does it say 7 times in one day?
That's the 7th day. On the 7th day, they're supposed to go 7 times, right? That's an absolute miracle. No matter how we look at that, that's absolutely miraculous. I don't even know. And they still had to fight on that day. They were fighting on that day.
The amount of soldiers they had weren't so many.
It seems strange. Why would they have had so few soldiers if it's the first war?
It's a small city, just like the only sense.
It'd be hard. First of all, by the eye, we talk about the small war in which they went, and even when they fought them the second time, you'd think the pasuk would have said it. And it could be. It could be it was a small amount of soldiers that went around. It's just weird.
Maybe it
is really
just like
weird. Yeah.
The Kohanim, like a small contingency.
But instead, the people went behind them. That's the only reason why it's a little weird to me. It could be. It just seems something happened over here in a Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted. It's just weird that you're walking around 7 times in one day and then fighting. That's just exhausting. Yeah, and that's got to be the answer as well. So somehow there were miracles here. Pasuk Vav. Vayikra Yeshua ben Nun alekwanim vayomer aleim su'u es aron abris v'shiva kwanim yisu shiva shofros. Kate, take the aron. 7 kwanim, take the 7 shofros. Yovlim, lifnei aron Hashem. Vayomer ala'am, ivru v'sobo se'ir v'achalutz yavru lifnei aron Hashem. Go circle the city, the vanguard. Everybody's going to go in front. You're going to have all these kwanim going in front over here. Everybody's going to give honor to what happened over here. And says Pasuk Ches. Vayikamor Yeshua ala'am, when he said it to them, he said to the people, v'shiva kwanim nosim shiva shofros yovlim lifnei Hashem. So they blew the shofars, right? And the Aron walked in front of them. And they had some type of army that went in front of the Kohanim. Taku ha-shofros, they blew the shofar, the Kohanim, v'ama'asev, holech ha-chorei ha-aron. And the ma'asev, there was the gatherers, Shevet Dan was all the way behind the Aron. Holech tukov ha-shofros, everybody's blowing in their shofar. V'asam tziva Yoshua lemor. But the people, Yoshua commanded them, saying, don't. Lo tariu, don't scream. Lo tishmiu as kolchem. I don't want to hear your voices. Lo yetsim yipichem davar ad yom amru aleichem mario variosam. Until Hashem tells them to do. Can you imagine this scene? The Kohanim blowing the shofars as they're going around, and everyone is silent. Everyone is absolutely silent. And the reason why they were silent is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to know it's not you. Don't scare the people from Yericho. Don't think it's like me, I'm the warrior, I'm the one who's able to do this. No. This is all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it is also dangerous. Can you imagine? You're being told to go around the city. Now, again, you'd assume you went as close to the city as possible because it would be too far. If you went too far away from the walls of the city, it would take too long to be able to go all around. So you're right up to the walls. What do you think the enemies have on top of the walls? What does any enemy have on top of their walls? What do? You have tar, you have fire, you're shooting arrows. All these people are up on top here. This is a really dumb thing to do. You don't put your people all the way up to the wall and have them go around. They could just throw things on top of them. And still the people did it. The miracle is not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, didn't let it happen. That's also miraculous. But the people were willing to do it and they didn't have any problem whatsoever. It is a little bit crazy over here. They warned the people. Everybody went ahead and did this, and it happened exactly like that. Vayasav Aron Hashem v'Seir, Hakef Pamachas. One time they went around every single day. They returned to the camp, and they rested overnight in the camp itself. Right? That's what they ended up doing. There's a really cool thing as well. What's really interesting is, Vayasav Aron Hashem, it seems in the Pasuk, the people that traveled opposite the Aron Kodesh, meaning the Kohanim, that had their shofars, they didn't walk with their backs to the Aron Kodesh. Why would you walk with your backs to the Aron Kodesh? They walked backward. They walked backward. They faced Aron Kodesh, blowing their shofars, walking backward the entire time around the city, which is really cool. And that's what it says by Yasev. I'm sorry? Almost like a parade. Yeah, as if they're just showing. This is just it, right? And they were saying like this, every night, instead of being at war or whatever it was, they went back to their tents. They were able to be with their wives. They were allowed to learn Torah, which is exactly what Yoshua did for all 7 days. Because again, this is not war positions anymore. They're not worried about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of them. you can imagine the people inside Yericho are just thinking, like, what is going on here? They had no idea what's happening. By Ashkim Yoshua Bavokeva, you saw Kohanim as Aron Hashem. Yoshua got up early in the morning. The Kohanim got up. They carried the Aron Hashem. Vashiva Kohanim Nosim Shiva Shofar Zayovlim Pnei Aron Hashem. Holchim Halofa Tukova Shofar Vachalot Solach Lepnei Vamaatim Vachare Aron Hashem. Halofa Tukova Shofar Vyasobo Zayir Bayamashini. They went around the city on the second day, Pamachas, one time. Yeshuva Machna Kohatsu Shezim did this all 6 days. They did all on those days. The first day, they couldn't do it as early. And the reason why is because, simply put, he got the command in the morning. Then he had to tell the people what to do, so they went ahead. The next six, the next 5 days, they got up early in the morning. They did it early, and then they went home. On the seventh day on Shabbos, they got up at Alos. They got up early in the morning. They surrounded the city 7 times. On this day, they went around 7 times all together. So there is machlokas, by the way, if they went around 13 or 14 times. Did they do, you know, 7 times altogether, 6 times on those 6 days, and then a 7th time, and then 7 times? Or then that would be altogether 14? Or was it 6 and then 7? Which one was it exactly? They weren't commanded. We don't know if they were commanded 1 time each day and then 7 times in the 7th day. We don't know if the 7th day was 1 time and then 7 times, or was it not included in the 1 time? It was just the 7 times.
That we hold 6 and 7 because on Nosha Rabbah we don't do one for the day and then.
Very, very good. We do those 6 and then we do those 7th right over there. He says that it's all dealing with something Kabbalistic, and therefore, like 13 is Echad, 14 is supposed to be all the names if you include Yisrael instead of Yaakov of the Avos. At this time, by the way, Yoshua created Aleinu L'Shabeach. Aleinu L'Shabeach up until Al-Kinakava, which we'll see was made later on. Aleinu L'Shabeach was made by Yoshua. And if you look, it says over here, Aleinu, Shalom, Va'anachnu, and Hu Elokeinu Einod. Those first letters are Hoshea, backward, Hey Vav Shin Ayin. He didn't want to put the Yud inside because he considered himself extremely humble. And originally, this prayer was said all together. He said it 7 times forward and 7 times backward, which means he did the opposite order of all Valenu. He read the Pesukim straight, but he read the last Pesuk first and then that, whatever it is. The Mikubalim say that if you say Aleinu backward and forward, there is a power to be able to give a refuah shlema to a person, which is an unbelievable line over here, but you're able to do that. Aleinu is gematria of 166. It's a gematria of Me'umad, which is why people stand when they say Aleinu. At some point, the Anshei Knesset Gedolah included in the Tefillos of Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, who was a Tana, ended up instituting that it would be at the end of every single one of our Tefillos, right? And that's the idea behind it. So Aleinu was put in, but he created it right here. He composed it as they were surrounding the walls. On the 7th time, Taka Akana b'Shofar, they blew on the Shofar, V'yam Yoshua la'am, Hariyu, call out loud. Now it's time. Kinosan Hashem lechem zeir. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you the city. It's for you. Vayzair cherem hi. This city, however, is cherem. He made this right then. There was a machlokes if Yoshua made it up as a durabanan, or if it was also a command from Hashem. We have not seen this as a command from Hashem, but he said it's a cherem to Hashem. B'chol asher bala Hashem, everything goes in it to Hashem. Rak rochav azona tichyahi. Only rochav azona, keep her alive. B'chol asher itab b'bayis kiach basa asam alachem asher shalachnu. Everybody that's with her in the house, because she hid the messengers. Rak tam shimru min cherem pentach rimu. You got to be careful from that cherem that everybody had done. Ulakach tam min cherem, you should take from, if you take from it, sam tam alachem Yisrael l'cherem v'arachar tam also. If you do it, then everything in Bnei Yisrael is going to go down. It's going to be bad for you. All the silver, gold, copper, and iron is holy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bring it into the Otsuros of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Guys, scream out loud. Be happy. Be joyous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you the people right now. You're getting everything right there. That's the idea behind it. You should be happy that everything's going to be over here. That's the idea behind it. Now, not only should Rachav Azona be alive, he also said, leave Rachav all of her possessions. Do not take anything from her. Although you're allowed to take, right? Although you're supposed to take everything from the city and destroy it, do not destroy anything that belongs to Rachav. Keep her everything she had. I'm sorry? No, there's two parts. Her house had a little bit in the wall. Bachomahi Yosheves is what it says. There was a part of the house that was inside the wall. That was the private area where she had her znus. And then there was another part that was inside the wall that was considered a regular house in which she had her in. So there was the znus part and the in part. And there were two parts altogether. The znus part was destroyed. The in part stayed around. And that was the difference. That Rachav Azona still was able to survive with all of her stuff. She was able to do that. So that's that. By the way, when everything came down, it goes through. It is interesting that Yoshua, I don't know if the people ever knew about the Meraglim. Yoshua sent the Meraglim on his own, right? I don't know if anybody ever knew that those Meraglim were sent. And when he told them...
They made the
mistake the first time around.
Right, exactly. So don't say it to other people. So it could be they never knew, and then all of a sudden it said that we sent. These are the Meraglim that we sent, the Melachim Asher Shalachnu. It's not Shalachnu, it's Shalachti. I sent it on my own, but he wanted to attribute it to everybody in the people to show that that happened. He also told them, make sure that nobody else takes from the Cherem, not just you, but nobody, because everybody's responsible for another. There's a concept called Arvus. Arvus applied once they went past the Jordan River. Now everybody's responsible for one another. If somebody else takes from the Cherem, other people can be punished for it. So be careful, said Yoshua. Don't let that happen, and that's exactly what happened. Unfortunately, anybody could. And we'll see, it did happen, because Achan took what he wasn't supposed to from the war. Other people were killed. It says,
but all the people that lived in Yericho were killed.
All the people are going to be killed as well. Vayara'am. So they screamed. The shofars were blowing. They screamed out loud. And the wall fell beneath itself. If the wall fell right beneath them, guys, they were able to just walk inside. What's the problem, right? There's nothing holding them back. They literally, they're all standing outside the city in some way, and they just walked in. As it was right there, Vayokadu was the ear, and they captured the city. Because I'll say, literally, they didn't have to do anything whatsoever. They did blow that note on the horn itself, and they accepted the ban itself. Everybody was thrilled, and whatever it was, and no stones fell on the heads of the Jews. The walls did not fall backward onto the Jews. The walls didn't fall backward on the people of Yericho. They simply just walked in, and that's that. A little bit of the walls all stood up from the ground so that everybody could see that it was a miracle. Enough so that they had to walk on top of it, and then they walked inside. But nonetheless, they're there. Those walls of Yericho still exist today. You can see them. There is an archaeological site by Yericho in which you can see those walls. They are huge. They are massive, massive walls. You can see them, right, if you go anywhere near Yericho on the right by the Jordan River. It's really amazing to see. They're huge walls, and they're sunk into the ground. They're mamish in the ground all the way down. It's the coolest thing you've seen. I'm sorry? I've seen pictures, unfortunately. I've not been there because it is Arab territory by the Shomron, and I was a little scared to go there when they did a tour. But they do have them, and they have pictures. It's amazing pictures. Absolutely. You see, like, a whole picture of, like, three guys standing on just, like, walking. They're huge. Okay. They took all this thing. They destroyed everything in the city. Man and woman. Child until older person. Ox, sheep, and donkey. All of Yicharev by the sword itself. Okay, there are seven reasons why Yericho was going to be completely different, why there was going to be a cherem over here. The cherem was made because, number one, this is Shabbos. They couldn't benefit from Maisa Shabbos, what they did on Shabbos itself. Number two, it was sort of like Bikurim and Chala. Bikurim and Chala, you give your first things back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like they gave their first thing that they conquered over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number three, tons of Avodah Zarah in the city. The city was filled with Avodah Zarah and Kishuf. Therefore, they didn't want to take anything for themselves. Number four, because God did everything here for them. If God did everything, then therefore give it right back to God. Number five, it's to make sure that everyone is killed. If they end up taking from the spoils, people are going to spend time trying to make money and they won't try to kill everyone in the city. You want to make sure everything was there. Number six, to spread terror in the hearts of everybody there, they destroyed the city completely. And number seven, that they fulfilled their oath, right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Canaanim on the other side of the Jordan River attacked, remember it says, Vayishev HaKanani, the Canaani came around, it was the people from Yericho, they swore at the time that if they would defeat the Canaani, which ended up being Sichon leading them, if they defeated them, then they would be Machrim, the city from which they all came. They came from Yericho, and therefore it says it over here.
And they also needed to replenish
everything they had over there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make sense. What do you mean replenish, though?
They have to think ahead too. They have to build a base of Migdash.
No, they didn't. They did take some of the gold, etc. Yeah, they did have to worry about making an Otzer, so to speak. Okay, it says in Pasuk Chav Beis, L'shnai Menashe Meraglim is Aretz. What's that?
This excavated map, so it's not, but it wasn't that large of a city. It was
only, I believe that. That makes
456
sense.
Meters long and 160 meters wide.
And that is small.
Large.
That's a couple blocks.
On those days, cities were not.
Yeah, so it's still a couple blocks. Still, can you imagine if they had their army going through? Let's say 50,000 people walking around the city seven times. 50,000 people.
You think it's that many?
Seven times. I don't know.
There were seven walls around it that were huge.
They were big. I don't know if that goes with, and it's interesting. It's the two men that spied out the land. Amar Yoshua, Bo Beis Isha Zona, go to the house of Rachav Azona. Take out the woman that's called Shalakash Nishpatam. You swore to her that. The young men, the Meraglim, came to us. Rachav as Aviv as Imav as Achav as called Shalah. They took out her father and her mother, Rachav, etc., her brothers, everything she owned, and all of her family. So they put them outside of the Machne. So they burnt the whole city. But they took some stuff for the base of Mikdash. As Rachel was in the base of Yevus Kol Shalah, Hachia Yoshua, he let them live. Batejah Bekar Yisrael, they lived amongst the Yisrael Yomazeh. Piachbia. Because they hid the malachim over here. Now it is interesting that he said the zona, right? Rachav zona over here. He says normally you cannot go near right now because she did tshuva, she abandoned her ways, she was Rachav zona. Now she's different, therefore it's going to be different. The reason why Kalev and Pinchas had to go is because simply put, they would recognize Rachav. I don't know if anybody else would recognize Rachav, if everybody else is going to recognize her. That's possible over there.
They know because she's in the house with the red string.
Well, yeah, but they didn't know. They might not have known. When they came into the house, they found that
but
it was full of people.
Everybody knew her place anyway.
Yeah, for sure. But when they came into the house, they found... No, I don't know, the
and
Jews.
And didn't she leave something on the door?
Yeah, for sure. That's how nobody knew. But they would recognize her. They found it full of people. You know what happened? Many people married into the family because they knew they were going to survive. So they all looked around and they're like, well, what's going on here? What do they do? So they took everyone out to wait for Yeshua. When Yeshua came and saw them, he said, I'll let them all live. So there were people that survived by marrying into Rachel's family. But technically, Rachel was over on her promise. Rachel was over on her promise because Rachel said, I'm only going to take certain people. They realized that they had taken more people. There weren't that many people in Rachel's family, but all of a sudden, everybody was there. Yoshua accepted them as converts. He married Rachel Azona. Other people married into Rachel's family. Right, and that's that. If you notice over here, they're called men. They're called messengers. They're called Na'arim because they resisted the temptation to be with Rachel Azona, and therefore, they are true shluchim, malachim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're also called Na'arim because even though they were very old at this time, still they acted very young. They acted in the best way possible. However, there was an impulse in their shvu over here. We'll go with the last pasuk. Pasuk Chavav, Vayashba Yoshua, Vayisi Yilemor, Arura Yishar Shlipnei Hashem, Asher Yakum Banas Ha'ir Azos Yisricho, Bivchoro Yisadeno Vasiro Yasiv Dalaseha. Yet Yoshua swore at that time saying, cursed is the man that builds up the city. He builds up the city, Yericho. Either he builds up the city or builds another city by the name of Yericho. Anybody who does it will use his Bechor to make the foundation stone, and his youngest child will be by the doors. He'll lose his children. Chazal say both of those are Usher, and unfortunately that was what it was going to be. He wanted Yericho to remain as a massive miracle so everyone see that it sunk into the ground and remain as a miracle forever. The building of the city is usually an attempt to attain glory, to show that you're greater, etc. The punishment for building Yericho then is to destroy your own glory, destroy your own kids over here. Unfortunately, it did happen. We'll talk about this next time, but Chiel built up the city and unfortunately lost all of his children. We have quite a bit over here. I only have Chafav. There's Chaf Zion. Where's Chaf Zion? Hashem was with Yeshua and he was known throughout the whole land. That's so funny to me. I'm always puts that in the beginning of Perek Tes, Perek Zion. Look at this. He puts it right here. All right, we'll stop with that for right now. We'll go in this next.